The lesson tonight is out of Colossians chapter 4, verses 2 through 6, Stability in Biblical Outreach to the Lost. Today's unsettling, insecure world has tempted and influenced many believers to be unsettled and insecure. Colossians presents Christ's all-sufficiency and supremacy in ways that settle and provide security, and one way it does is by teaching in Colossians 4, 2 to 6, the believer's stability in the ministry of biblical evangelism. Our post-Christian world has led to a growing estrangement of the lost from Bible truth, and with it often a hostility to the Christian faith that calls for wisdom in evangelizing. So we need to view this passage for our insight. A lot of Christians I've spoken with over the years, and I'm sure you've spoken with, have expressed anxiety or concerns or problems in witnessing and having effective witness. And a lot of times it comes from errant views of what it means to be a witness and how to witness for the Lord. And this is a wonderful passage that deals with this fact. I'd like to read the passage and then we'll look at it. Colossians 4, verses 2 through 6. Continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving. With all praying also for us, that God would open unto us a door of utterance to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in bonds, that I may make it manifest or clear as I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom towards them that are without, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. It's interesting, when Paul wrote Colossians, he was a prisoner of Rome for his Christian faith. And this was at his first Roman imprisonment. And he was living in a non-Christian world that our post-Christian world is increasingly coming to mimic. There's no question that we're living in a post-Christian world. And so the applicability of this passage is becoming more and more acute, because of the situation that Paul faced at his time and increasingly the situation that we faced. So this is really how we need to deal with the issue of outreach. So Colossians 4, 2 to 6, that addresses evangelistic outreach in Paul's era, is very applicable for us as follows. Notice the first thing: evangelism must be accompanied by prayer. Boy, is this important. Like the founder of Dallas Theological Seminary, Lewis Berry Chafer, who wrote his book in 1919 on evangelism, and he titled it True Evangelism, Winning Souls by Prayer. The greatest missionary in church history, the Apostle Paul, directed his readers to perform the ministry of evangelism with continual prayer. It's interesting how he said, continue in prayer, stay in it, bathe your efforts with prayer. When we are involved in a witnessing opportunity, when we are interacting with the person, when we're and before that, and then afterwards, there needs to be prayer. The reason for that is several fold. We're working in a very hostile environment spiritually. Every unsaved person, according to John chapter 8, verse 44, is a child of the evil one. And also, 2 Corinthians chapter 4 tells us that Satan is the god of this world, and he's blinded the eyes of the unsaved to the gospel lest they believe. So when you're involved in a witnessing effort, you're not interacting just with a human being there. You're interacting with forces, spiritual forces that are much greater than you are and much greater than me. And that being the case, we've got to pray. Because without prayer, we're not going to get anywhere in evangelism. It's a big, big job. So, in such continual prayer, Paul directed his readers to watch, and we explain this effort. We need to watch for the threat of personal sin that can sabotage our evangelistic effectiveness. In Matthew chapter 24, verses 42 to 44, the Lord Jesus brought this out. Let me just get those verses. Matthew 24, 42. Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known at what watch the thief would have come, he would have watched and would not have allowed his house to be broken up. Therefore also you be ready, for in such an hour as you do not think, the Son of Man comes. So we've got to be very, very careful to watch out for that. Paul in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, let me get that passage out, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, wrote about this problem of worldliness and personal sin. In verses 5 through 8, he says, "You are all the children of light, the children of the day. We are not of the night nor of the darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober." The sleeping is sleeping in a life lived in sin rather than watching out for sin and being sober, being clear-minded. "For they that sleep, sleep in the night, but they that be drunken are drunken in the night. But let us who are of the day be sober, sensible, putting on the breastplate of faith and love for an helmet and the hope of salvation." So we got to watch out for sin. Also, we need to watch for angelic conflict opposition to our ministry. In Acts chapter 20, verses 29 through 31, the Apostle Paul wrote about how in the latter days dangerous wolves would arise from the flock of God itself and rise up and call out people after them. And it would create a real problem. And 1 Peter 5, 1 to 8, where he's talking about elders and people who are under elders. And Paul and Peter himself writes that we need to watch because Satan, as a roaring lion, goes around seeking whom he may devour. I was talking with the man today who had mentioned a prayer request about a big division that's occurring in a church. A division occurred because of something unbiblical that the leaders in the church did. They meant well, but it was unbiblical. And it just blossomed right out into a full-fledged division. So Satan is always looking out for trouble. And in evangelism, he wants to hijack and sabotage your evangelistic witnessing effort. So what we need to do is to watch out for Satan's efforts and be in prayer in regards to them. Then Paul directed his readers to thank God. And in the context, this applies to thanking God for answers to prayer and for his help in evangelistic ministry efforts. We really need to do that. I remember at Claudia Toth's funeral, I had to do that funeral. And it was on a Monday. It was after we'd had a big weekend, and I was actually pretty tired. But we had to go through it. And I sensed throughout the process the Lord actually carrying, because we wanted to give the gospel. There were a lot of friends that Claudia especially had witnessed to. These were people that were not saved, and they needed to have the gospel broken down clearly. And the Lord just carried in regards to that. And so I found myself thanking the Lord for his help. So that's what we need to do. Evangelism is supernatural ministry. It goes way beyond what we do. We have to be involved. We're partners with God in this ministry, but it's God that has to be the witness, way beyond our efforts. Then Paul directed that his prayer readers pray for specific needs relative to the evangelistic activity itself. This is very, very important. We're in Colossians, our home text again. Let me get it here. Colossians chapter 4, verse 3. We need to pray for God to provide us opportunities to witness effectively. Since Satan is the god of this world who has blinded the eyes of the lost to the gospel, 2 Corinthians 4, 3 and 4, and lost people are children of the evil one, John 8, 44, we believers need to have God open the door of opportunity to witness against the angelic foes who oppose us. I would think that this is probably one area where more Christians that I know of have made mistakes. In all good intentions, gone ahead and just blurted out a witness before the Lord had opened a door. That can backfire. What we need to do is to wait for the Lord to open the door. If the Apostle Paul asked prayer that God would open the door, and he was the greatest witnesser and the greatest missionary of the history of the church, we need to do that. We have to wait. When the witnessing opportunity comes, you'll be able to drive a school bus through it sideways. It'll be wide open. I've had unbelievers who've come to visit my church. They've been witnessed to by other people, but they were really concerned. And I could hardly speak fast enough. They were asking so many questions, one right after the other. I got hardly, for a solid hour, I was completely worn out. But they were so wide open. That's where the Lord has prepared the heart. That's what we need to do. We need to wait for that opportunity. Sometimes we'll only just be able to get a word in, and then the opportunity will you know, close down. But that's all right, get the word in. But we need to pray for that. Then we need to pray for the ability to speak with clarity as we ought amid the angelic conflict. Colossians 4:4, Paul wrote of making the gospel manifest. The King James word is manifest, but it translates the Greek word phanerao, which means to make clear. Unsaved people do not have the lingo that you and I have. We talk about salvation, we talk about fellowship and so forth. We have technical meanings for those words. These people, you know, salvation, what does that mean? We had a woman one day that showed up in our church, and we were mentioning Jesus and Jesus Christ. So she asked someone afterwards, what's Jesus Christ? Is that a philosophy? Is it a person? What do you mean when you say Jesus Christ? She never heard of Christ. And so I had to tell her, well, he's a person. He's God's son and all that. She said, really? Well, where is he? Well, he's not. He's in heaven now. Now, you mean he was on the earth at one time? Yeah. So they went into this whole thing. This is all new to her. So we've got to be careful with unsaved people. We've got to be clear. We have to understand where they're coming from. So we need to get to know them. It's very important to make it clear. Then evangelism has to be accompanied by godly actions, verses 5 and 6. Walk in wisdom, etc., etc. Paul directed his readers to order their lives in a godly walk. We need to function in wisdom towards unbelievers. In view of Paul's clarification in verse 6, to have our speech be gracious or winsome, seasoned with salt, pure and penetrating, walking in wisdom as to our actions in life must similarly involve winsome versus offensive actions that are morally pure and penetrating as to our testimony by way of our seriousness and kindness. It's very important. Unsaved people will generally gauge us by what we do. Children are that way. Children will not copy what you say. They will copy what you do. They'll read from what you do and guess what you are. And unsaved people are very much the same way. So acts of kindness, acts of politeness, acts of consideration are extremely important in conveying to people the love of Christ. We also need to make the most of every opportunity we have in interacting with the lost, being constantly focused on looking for the opportunity to be able to present the gospel. You notice in the last part of verse 5, redeeming the time, buying up the time. Unsaved people currently are headed towards a Christless eternity in hell. That's a crisis. They don't know they have a crisis. We know. Okay. So every opportunity, we need to keep our eyes open for that door. And when that opportunity comes, then utilize it. And that's something that God will give us guidance on. And then Paul directed his readers to speak godly words. Boy, our speech is important. Really. We need to be consistent in using proper speech. Notice where he says in verse 6, let your speech always, we need to be consistent. That's so important. And we need to be gracious or pleasing with our words, with grace. This is gracious. Grace, kindness, consideration, politeness. We can appeal to people by the way we speak to them, the kindness. You don't have to butter them up with false, compliments. Don't mean that, but treat people with kindness and consideration. And then we need to be pure and penetrating in our speech. That's what salt is. Salt is pure, and it penetrates as if salted with salt. And then if we're consistently pleasing, pure, and penetrating in our words, we will always be able to answer everyone who asks us a reason for our faith. Notice how you ought to answer everyone. A lot of witnessing is involved in answering questions. People will see something different about you. They want to know, what makes you different? You're not cussing like the rest of the people on the job or, something. They'll pick it up. And they'll want an answer. And so you clarify, oh, okay, well, I'm a Christian. And what I mean by that is I have a personal relationship with Christ. So that's because that's what makes me not do this or that and so forth. And then just drop it there. And a lot of times they'll want to pursue that. Well, what do you mean, personal relationship with Jesus Christ? What happens? Who's Jesus Christ? So then you get to talk some more. I've often found that don't give the unbeliever more than what he asks. Just answer the question that he asks, and he'll think, huh. And often that'll lead to more of a discussion. And then you go just as far as he's open, but don't go any further. Don't kick the door down. Wait for the opening. So effective evangelism in our post-Christian world takes prayerful reliance on the Lord, coupled with watching for temptations to sin and angelic conflict opposition with thanksgiving, asking God for the opportunity to witness, the clarity to speak well, that is all couched in a consistently godly, winsome life and speech habits. So may we apply Colossians 4, 2-6 to be an effective witness in our post-Christian world. Many years ago, there was a fellow who I went to high school with him. He was a couple of years behind me, so I really didn't get to know him well, but my younger brother got to know him well. But this fellow was not a Christian, didn't come from a Christian home. But for years, he saw there was a Christian family that he knew. Every Sunday, they got dressed up, they got in their car, and they drove by his house. They're all dressed up going to church. And he knew they're going to church. Okay, big deal. Well, many years later, somehow he got involved with the Hell's Angels. And he tried to get out of it, and, you know, it was a really difficult situation. Well, he wanted to know, he knew that the answer to life was something beyond just being in Hell's Angels. He'd been a school teacher, he dropped out of that and so forth. He was just frustrated. We had a dream one night. And in the dream, there was this dream of this car of this family that he remembered back in high school. They're going to church every Sunday. And with the dream, the words, this is where the answer is. And he woke up, and that's the answer he was looking for. So he did some investigating and found out what church they went to. It happened to be a Baptist church. So he showed up in church and got saved. Well, years later, my brother was at a reunion, a high school reunion with his class, and this guy came up to him. He knew my brother was a saved. And he shared with him his testimony and how the Lord had used this dream about this Christian family who was always going to church to get him to investigate and come to know Jesus Christ. And he got out of the Hell's Angels and everything, and now he's a very vibrant Christian for the Lord. But here was a family that was a testimony just driving to church. They never spoke the gospel to him. They were on their way to church. But he knew it, and God used that, put it in a dream for him. So we're on call 24/7, 365. We really are in evangelism. And what we do with our lives has an impact on unsaved people, and God can use it. So our lives, our speech and everything, we need to be ready to minister to the Lord.